This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Welcome to Tribe of Two, the officially unofficial podcast for The Mandalorian on Disney Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 3, Episode 2, Chapter 18, The Mines of Mandalore. Who would have guessed that in Episode 2 we would already be at the Mines of Mandalore?
I was kind of blown away myself.
They must have taken some of the criticism they got about side quests to heart from the previous seasons, because they put us on zero side quests, and I thought the IG-11 thing was going to be a huge distraction this season. Apparently not. Apparently, he doesn't actually care about IG-11. It's really just about having a droid who can spelunk, and D4 is good enough.
Yeah, I wonder if the IG-11 is going to come back at the end of the season, because it does feel wild to have him insist that this is the only droid he can trust, And for good, I mean, you know, he tries to trust his R5, and it's a waste of money.
Mm-hmm.
Waste of money. He should have gone down there himself anyway.
But it was not a waste of plot, because, man, we trucked along in this episode. We've already bathed in the waters. I mean, he's officially, by my judgment, a Mandalorian again.
Damn near drowned in him. Yeah. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Does he have to take the state of full creed? Because he went, I don't think the last few paragraphs of the Creed of Mandalore go glug, glug. Choke, gasp.
He said him choke. On the way down. I mean, his helmet's sealed.
Gotcha.
He just wanted to make sure he died a Mandalore. Ian.
If a Mandalore falls in the water without his jetpack, he's just dead. He's just a dead man.
Apparently, yeah. At least the Beskar is that Mandalorian.
That fucking heavy, huh?
Mm-hmm. I guess so. I don't know. Anyway, I was pleasantly surprised that we'd not go on a bunch of side quests. So not a bad episode, in my opinion. It was fun. It was a little bit of danger for little baby Grogu. It's going to be interesting to see where they take Bo-Katan in the next few episodes, the rest of the season, because she seems to be interested in this whole oath thing. Mando's got her perhaps questioning her lack of faith. Maybe she's finding it disturbing now.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed this episode. I thought it's exactly what I, with my expectations out of season one, this is exactly what I hope the Mandalorian can be. It's family-friendly entertainment, but it doesn't insult my intelligence. Mm-hmm. It's very cool. Like you said, it's got the perfect blend of excitement and danger. Mystery. Mm-hmm. Doesn't help that Katie Sackhoff is in it, and she's just super freaking cute, and I'm already shipping her in the Mando. I want her to rule as the Queen of Mandalore, and I want him to be her prince consort.
I see attractive people.
Well, you know, she's gonna have to break him out of this whole Mandalore, this whole child. She's gonna have to
Failing, man.
The children's watch, or she's gonna turn him into a man's watch or something. I don't know. That's a bummer. That's a bummer. Do they not even take their helmets off to their mates? The Mandalorians with their helmets on?
They must not. I mean, you're right. It doesn't say anything about taking your cod piece off. You take that off all you want.
I've heard of using protection, but this is ridiculous. I think that I don't know. I can't help. I see two attractive people that look like they'd be a fun couple, and I start to ship them. It's a weakness of mine. It does feel like, and someone in the feedback suggested as much. It does. Have we ever talked about this before? That the Mandalorian, the title we're referring to, is in fact Grogu.
Possibly. When he got his chainmail Beskar shirt or whatever.
He got the chainmail Beskar shirt. I thought sure that he was going to find a child-sized helmet when he started picking up helmets off the floor. And that would, he keeps on referring to as like our people, our home world. I know I don't like to do this a lot, but I actually got on Wikipedia. I read some of the shit that is in the tomes, and apparently, a foundling is considered a full Mandalorian. Okay. Until they become of age, in which point they can choose to become a Mandalore, or they can choose to leave the life.
Gotcha.
But it does seem like the Mandalorians are painted as this like really fractured people. They have this kind of egalitarian society where if you are the foundling and you can be every bit as Mandalore as anybody else, as long as you keep to the whatever creed that the bulk of Mandalores follow, and that he could be some kind of unifying force, literally.
Oh,
and there's also
okay.
the talk of like the Jedi and the Mandalore's kind of fractured relationship, and this would be the marriage of that and the one being. I think the shape of the story is interesting. I like the religious struggles going in both directions, the debate about what tradition and the mysticism and myth and legend have to play in a society. And the show just like this show's fun to look at. Like Mando taking off the N1 starfighter on Boonta Eve, surrounded by fireworks, just looks great.
Yeah. I enjoy Pally Motto doing her running her scams.
Yeah.
Her rackets on Rodians and
it's
shit like that.
Not hilarious, but it's funny, and it's not her stepping in Bantha shit or stuff like that. I dig it.
The only objection I have to Grogu being the Mandalorian is, how does he put the helmet on? Those ears, man. Those ears. It's going to look silly with the Beskar helmet that he's going to have to wear. It's going to have these gigantic ears coming off of it.
Any more ridiculous than the one kid whose, you know, long hair was sticking out of his helmet like some kind of hippie, goddamn space hippie?
Slightly, sure.
When the helmet seals and the tips of Grogu's ears roll out of it because they're cauterized off, like we discussed last episode, that'd be horrific. That'd be horrific, Jim. No one wants to see that. I would suggest that they make a Mandalorian helmet that has holes on the side and his ears to stick out.
Well, that's technically part of your helmet is off. I don't think that's allowable. I think it's got to cover the whole head, including the ears.
Oh, seeing ears is intimate, huh?
Oh, yeah. I mean, some say that's even sexier than seeing the whole face. Yeah.
Especially for a Yoda species. Mm-hmm. That's a big part of their appeal.
All right. The lobes.
The lobes.
We've gone too far with this. Let's get into the recap.
Yeah, let's do it. Do not remove your helmet. We'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is The Way. Back to the podcast, because here's more Tribe of Two.
Start off with, like I said, Pelly running a Jawa parts scavenging racket on a Rodian. Mando stops by and asks her for help finding the memory circuit for IG-11. She doesn't have one, but she does manage to sell him on buying R5-D4, and then they take off for their adventures. Why does he buy R5-D4?
Has he decided that the IG-11 that only he could trust is just too big of a pain in the ass? Like, if these Jawas can't find it, then I guess maybe it really can't be found. I mean,
the last thing I think of is an astromech droid. The last thing.
But if you remember, they can fly around now. They got jetpacks built into their arms. They can
you
hover.
Think
they
R5
can do...
has a jet, a functioning
this particular R5
jetpack. Yeah, right.
I think they're supposed to be understood to be a lot more all terrain than they look when they have a little person inside wiggle them around. You know, like they actually have motors and sophisticated 10,000-year-old spacefaring technology built into them.
God, but, it was so stupid when they gave R2 his jet. His feet jets. It's so dumb.
I think it made a lot of sense. I think it made a lot of sense.
It only made sense in how little sense the astromechs made in the first place, but
what?
I suppose.
You've got astromech heresy? What's wrong with astromechs?
I guess if you're gallivanting around in space, some jetpacks come in handy. Perhaps.
Yeah, a droid that needs to fix your ship would have to be able to navigate in space.
Here's the thing, though. You're not going to need the power that lets you navigate in a gravity well out in space. I those things look heavy, man. And those jets on their feet don't look substantial enough to get them moving around at high velocities in an atmosphere. But what do I know? What do I know?
I have a question. Why did they program droids with sentience and a sense of self-preservation when clearly it doesn't serve them? You know, like, why do you need to have a courageous droid like R2-D2 that puts himself out there and gets himself blasted when it's like a coin flip? Like, what if R2-D2 is like a C-3PO type that's like shit in his pants, you know, and he doesn't ever stick his little dome out for anybody? Like, why don't they just... Well, but what I'm saying is, like, why do they do that? Like, I can see, like, maybe for an interpreter droid, you'd want a human interface that, you know, can simulate emotions. But even then, you'd want, like, a suspend this affect. Like, I'm tired of C-3PO shit. You shouldn't have to just, like Han Solo style grabs 3PO's mouth and, like, pin him against a bulkhead to make him shut up, right?
Uh-huh,
like,
totally.
And they're this is widely racist towards droids. It's not like there's some kind of social compunction about, like, we got to respect the droid's autonomy because they're like banned from doing this and banned from doing that. They have restraining bolts that like override their basic programming so that they can't, like, I don't know. It's I like to store these droids, but they don't make a lot of sense because this R5 unit just shitting itself at the idea of all the things it's going to have to do, I think is pretty funny.
Yeah, so this is actual R5-D4, and for people who don't remember, this is the red astromech that the Uncle Owen was going to buy when he bought C-3PO, and it turns out it malfunctioned, it had a bad motivator, and they had to get R2 instead. C-3PO suggested that. They have changed the lore around R5-D4 significantly since my time with Star Wars. It used to be that it just had a bad motivator and it exploded on the way back. And the Jawas were trying to pawn off a bad bot on the Uncle Owen and Beru. It turns out, I guess somewhere in Legends, is that what they're calling the older stuff now?
Yeah.
R5 actually was sabotaged by R2 at some point.
Really?
And blew up because of that.
I
don't remember exactly why, but then they've retconned it again in 2017 in a series of short stories. R5 blew himself up, or faked a bad motivator, made Luke think it was a bad motivator. It wasn't, in order to let R2 continue his mission to save the galaxy.
So the droids worked it out among themselves?
Apparently.
Because I also, again, I did, God help me, I read Wikipedia today, and they mentioned that the R5s are a budget line of astromechs. And I'm like,
well,
so they're going to retcon that, like, these are just a shitty, like, ones with bad motivators, where R2s are, like, rugged, reliable units. And
that would make sense. Like, mil-spec stuff, right? Maybe R2's a mil-spec droid.
Sure.
And R5s are just off the shelf. Yeah.
The shit versions.
But yeah,
and a
D4, I was shocked.
Oh my
that.
God. You maybe get an R5, but a D4 unit, those things.
Right.
No, notorious for the motivators.
Yeah, it's just crazy to me that he would do that and just leave IG-11 as a scrap heap over on.
That's why I'm saying there's no way. IG-11 is going to have surely will have an appearance later on the season, or I don't know what they're doing. I do like, I always like Amy Sedaris. Has she always missed a tooth, or is this a new feature for her?
Oh, it might be new. I don't know.
I thought I didn't notice her like having one of her front teeth knocked out before, but I don't know. Maybe that happened in one of the other spinoffs. But I love her and Grogu, and I really like Grogu like force jumping into her arms. Mm-hmm. Super cute.
Yeah, force assisted flip. Her talking about, you know, oh, you're really driving a hard bargain here. I got to work on Boonta Eve, like that being the big race day. I guess that's.
I got a life. Yeah. I'm popular.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
So what do you think about them reinstalling the droid socket? Like, the whole selling point of the N1 was that it's got the Grogu port, and now how long do you think we'll have this R5 be stuck with this R5?
A while, I assume.
The rest of the season?
Yeah. And then okay, here's what I think they're doing. They're training Grogu to pilot his own ship. Right?
The navigate.
He's telling about navigation. He's telling about that this is important for a Mandalorian to know. Uh-huh. He's going to have his own ship into season. And then you're going to have Mando and him flying side by side on their missions instead of Grogu in his lap.
I can dig it.
What ship would he get? Because I feel like an N1 would have been great for him. Maybe Mando gets a new Razor Crest type ship and gives Grogu the N1.
Maybe Mando gets like a larger ship that the N1 can dock with.
Yes. All right. There we go.
We need the perfect formula battle,
selling toys.
Yes.
And pleasing fans.
Oh, yeah. Toys that dock and other toys. Come on. $99.99 at Christmas this year. The other thing is, where do you stand on the Star Warsification of like common English phrases? Like, I don't give a bantha poodoo for your opinion. Or like Amy Sedaris says, no chance cubes instead of no dice.
I always think it's okay.
It's good in moderation. If it starts becoming do you remember some of the Rogue One books or Rogue Squadron books? They turned that shit up to like 13.
No.
Where not only did it have like swears like fracking, but like every page had some kind of like, you know, I'm three hyperspace motivators to the wind, or
okay,
just a stint like that. It's like, you know, it's, you're really taking me out, of the Star Wars of it all.
Yeah. As if the people in Star Wars don't have sheets.
Right.
I don't know. All right. They arrive. They head out. They arrive at Mandalore, and Mando explains a little bit about the Mandalorians to Grogu. How he grew up on Concordia, which is a moon of Mandalore, and how Kalevala, I think it is in the same system, different planet, just kind of one orbit out here, and that's where Bo-Katan is. So she's close by. I figured like she'll show up at some point, and boom, she does.
Yeah, and it's also a good thing that Mando's teaching him how to navigate, because he's going to use that here in about 5-10 minutes. Hey, like I said, that's the thing that sets us apart from Boba Fett. It's pretty linear in terms of plot, but everything connects, you know, this is all tidy. Everything pays off within its episode, and, it makes sense and feels good.
Yeah. They enter the atmosphere, which disrupts their off-world communications. They land and they send their R5 to analyze the atmosphere. R5 goes around the corner and disappears, and Mando leaves Grogu in the ship, heads into the cave to find R5. Instead, he finds a bunch of aliens who attack him, and he fights them off with a darksaber. And then he finds R5, and they both head back to the ship.
What'd you think of the Mines of Moria? I mean, Mandalore.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I saw that comparison. I thought they were pretty cool. I really like the underground city that we have, and I don't know how this happened. I assume this was above ground at some point. Like, why would you have the city part of the mines underground also? But I don't know how they would have got underground if they weren't already underground.
Because
presumably the glassing that we see on the surface happened while the city was still functioning.
Maybe that's like there used to be a city on top of it, but all that's left is the undercity part, like the more mechanical, like mine.
Like if you scrape the top off Coruscant, you'd still have a bunch of city below.
Like, these are the foundations of the buildings, or like, this is where all the mining equipment stored before, you know, like Mandalorians would take off their, what? I don't know. There's no way. Mandalorians don't mine, right? They probably had people for that. They had droids.
Yeah. I think so.
Trying to see like the Mandalorian to pickaxe, just like, you know, bringing that best, loading 16 tons of Beskar and trading it in for credit at the company store. It just doesn't seem like it, but I thought the pits looked good. I thought this is another good use of, I'm a presume, the expanse, or the volume rather.
Yeah. Could be.
I look at it and it's like, man, there used to be a slight telltale washed out appearance of the background, but like, boy, it's really convincing. There's a couple of times where like Bo-Katan and Mando are doing a walk and talk where you can kind of like, oh yeah, this is the volume for sure. But man, they're doing a good job of hiding it.
Yeah, it's cool. They're doing a good enough job that I'm not looking for it anymore. I'm like, these effects are fairly seamless. So,
I like this. This is a pretty savage fight for a family film. You know, he's lopping arms off and impaling people, throwing them into bottomless voids. I like that he's still clumsy with the Darksaber, but it's enough to at least get him out of this jam.
And you're going to see the contrast between him wielding it and Bo-Katan wielding it later.
Right.
And that's
really knows what she's doing.
The important part. Yeah.
Yeah. And he finds out the other important part for his journey as an apostate is he finds out that he has been 100% lied to about the fate of Mandalore. And Bo-Katan, who he considers an apostate herself, or at least an infidel, knew the truth. So that's got to be something rattling around in his old helmet.
Yeah, there's something weird about that whole thing, because like, I guess Bo told him that told Mando that it was not cursed, right? Mandalore is not cursed, and he goes on about that in this episode and says, "Yeah, she was right. It's not cursed."
I think she said that last episode, didn't she? And he's going
I think you're right.
About,
yeah. But then she says the exact opposite when she's down in the mines with Mando, and I don't know why.
I thought it was a distinction because, you know, she's like, it's still painful for her to see Mandalore ruined, but it's a fraction of what she feels to see the Mandalorians themselves divided against each other. Such a strong people fighting themselves instead of like the people who are responsible for their oppression or working together to try to reclaim. Because like, clearly Mandalore's fucked up, but not so fucked up you probably couldn't rebuild. But like all these sects and cults and the mythos and stuff are like, that's her chief frustration, I thought, as different than like the fact that Mandalore is just, you know, kind of like biologically ecosystem. But it's not even, the ecosystem hasn't collapsed. Like they mention these Morlock looking things. Like they tell us their names later on, but they're the native species of that planet and they're thriving. So the atmosphere is not poisoned. It seems like the Mandalores could do just fine here.
Potentially, yeah. I don't know why they're not there. Ideological reasons? Who knows? So they are back at the ship now. R5 says the atmosphere is fine to breathe. Apparently Mandalore isn't cursed. The Mando gang goes back into the cave where they identify the Civic Center and float down beneath it into the sewers. And they splash around through alien sewage for a while until they find a passage down to the mines. Mando gets grabbed by a giant robot and hauled off as Grogu sits by and does nothing. All those force powers, does nothing.
It's tough, man. You got to be focused and you got to free all your passion. And it's his dad getting ganked by the cyber spider and he's all gripped up about it.
Yeah. You know what? Here's the thing I got gripped up about. I was wondering about the waters in the mines of Mandalore, the living waters. Because I see where they're positioned beneath leaky sewers. I'm like, I think the waters are cursed because they're just sewage now. Like it's a combination of alien feces and mythosaur piss.
That's about, says 50% alien feces, 50% mythosaur piss.
Yeah. Yep. That's why you're scared of the waters. That's why this place isn't sacred anymore.
That's why there's only one mythosaur left. It's the only one strong enough to take that concentration of its own urine.
The only one dirty enough to like it.
It's like that guy in Dodgeball.
The rest of them left.
It's sterile and I like the taste.
Yeah. So I don't know. I just them being positioned under the sewers of Mandalore.
What do you think about this little cyborg dude? I found it hard not to make comparisons to like General Grievous. In fact, totally. I thought his eye looked a lot like the eyes we see of General Grievous. And I wonder if they're like, because I thought General Grievous was a one-time deal. He's an alien. They got fucked up and he got Darth Vader'd essentially.
Yeah.
An alien version of Darth Vader. But like, if this is the same species as whatever General Grievous was, now it seems like they're retconning it that like this is just a race of cyborgs.
Possibly. This one looks more robot, than man at this point.
If there's anything left, it's an eyeball, right? Like just maybe half.
Grievous at least had a little bit of meat on his bones still, but
sure, he had that sack of that lung sack or whatever that had that all of his guts in it.
But it could be the same. It definitely was giving me strong Grievous vibes for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because, man, they write these Wikipedia articles like with the speed, like less than 6 hours after this episode came out, there was a full fledged article about, because I went to look up mythosaurs and like half the mythosaur article has to deal with this episode. Like, God damn, like this stuff is being written at the speed of, I guess, Disney Plus.
Yeah, like I'm sitting there taking notes when I'm watching it. People must be sitting there updating Wikipedia to get credit.
Yeah, and
or Wikipedia, sorry.
It does seem like this stuff is massively interconnected with like Rebels and some of the other animated stuff they're doing. To the extent that it's almost like spoilers if you're only watching the Mando. It's something we'll be talking about later, I imagine.
Yeah, probably. Speaking of selling toys, this seems like an alien designed to sell toys, right? It's in some kind of robot that I assume is a mining droid or a mining exoskeleton, I guess, for this droid that goes inside of it, which has another droid in its head, which has the eyeball living inside of that.
Yeah, it's like a modular cyborg system where you've got this head unit that can plug into different frames. It's kind of neat. I liked it.
I think it's pretty cool. So Mando's taken to the mines by this robot, spit roasted apparently, which turns out to be his cage for the most of the rest of the episode. Grogu tries to free Mando, but he's not strong enough and alerts the alien in the attempt. Mando says, go get Bo-Katan. So Grogu flees in his pod, being attacked by aliens every step of the way, but he uses the force to get back to the ship.
Yeah, it blows those Morlocks right out of their Morlock tunnel.
I felt so bad for little baby Grogu when he jumps out of his pod, because now he's just walking through alien sewage in bare feet.
Sure.
Does not have Beskar boots. Just clomping around in that stuff. Maybe he's using the force to keep his little dainty feet about a centimeter above the ground.
He's got force socks on.
Force booties.
Yeah, I think that's one of the force affinities you could get with Kyle Katarn and Dart, you know, and Jedi Knight, right? Force booties.
Yeah.
Force so you don't booties. have to walk through raw sewage.
Yep.
The force that binds all living things together just comes together and repels shit. That's what it said right in the manual.
But it's cool. I was getting like strong Grievous vibes, but also strong like nesting doll vibes out of this thing. And it's progressive too. You see like, oh, well, it can get out of this mining exoskeleton thing. But it's not till a couple scenes later where we get to see it come out of its arm. It's like a droid body.
Yeah.
And just be like this little skittering head thing. I thought that was sweet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's almost like body horror, like in the Thing. You know, you see this little head with sprout spider legs and skitter around, like, ugh. Mm-hmm. But I thought the design of it was really cool. Like, it's like the spring trap that's also a robot, that's also a detachable cage, that's all, yeah. And God damn it, there might be a Wikipedia article for this. But I did wonder, like, what the fuck is he doing here? Like,
he's milking him.
How does he live? Does he go and grab some Morlocks and milk them for their...
Maybe, yeah. Milks the ant... whatever they're called. Alamites.
The Alamites. He's milking Alamites for their life juices so he can keep cyborg parts up. Seems like a gross... Why would you pick Mandalore to live on, of all places?
I don't know. It's your home. I assume that's what the eyeball is like swimming in, right? Whatever he's extracting... or trying to extract from Mando is probably what's in the casing around his fleshy bits.
Could be. I thought he was extracting it for like his, yeah, like just to keep whatever his organics going. But yeah, maybe he distills it to eyeball fluid.
Yeah, looks similar in color. But when Mando's ship shows up at Bo-Katan's castle without Mando, she decides to go after him. And they all take Bo's ship back to the caves on Mandalore. And Grogu shows her where they were, despite being frightened. They run into some aliens while traversing the shit tunnels, and Bo kills him.
Bo's ship is fucking cool. I really like that kind of like Imperial shuttle wing design, but it's in like a sleek fighter type of deal. I was a sucker for ships that kind of transform, like Slave One, Imperial shuttlecraft, the B1, yeah. Or the B wing.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't really transform, but I guess his wings pop out. It's
a little bit of that.
Yeah.
S4 is an attack position.
I was, as a kid, really liked toys that transformed. I don't even start on Transformers, but I was like that. And I still am a kind of a sucker for something that shifts its function like this.
Yeah, it can be done well, and it can be done less well. I think a Foundation... we watched that and had some real problems with some of the transforming ships near the end of that season.
Yeah, that's true. Not every transforming thing has to be cool, for sure.
Right. But I thought this was pretty cool.
I like this kind of like, you know, you see this Luke Skywalker a lot where she's just kind of having a conversation with herself, but Grogu's there, so it doesn't seem like she's crazy. Mm-hmm. And she's filling him in about the past of the Mandalorians and the Jedi. And
her, which is hilarious to me, this like, you know, I knew a bunch of Jedi, you know, mm-hmm. back in the day. This is like the Star Wars version of telling your black friend, the black dude about your black friend, right?
I can't be racist against Jedis. My dad used to hang around with a bunch of Jedi warriors. Right. Yeah.
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 I worked with a Jedi once.
Mm-hmm. Good guy.
Yeah, that's definitely how I was reading it.
Always, every time we had lunch, he always made this weird hand gesture on me and said, "You're not racist towards Jedi." And ever since, I just kind of like the guy, you know?
I like seeing her detail her, like, personal, her family's involvement in this, because she did rule over this place at one time, or at least her family did. And her relationship to it is very different, I think, than a lot of other Mandalorians.
And oh boy, there is so much to know about her whole background.
Oh, I
guess this is like just tons and tons of material that people email to me, and I'm like, what?
This Clone War stuff?
But yeah, Clone War stuff, Rebel stuff.
Oh. All right.
Some other Filoni and Favre project that they started. I don't know if it's the bad. Yeah, because again, I just watch cartoons. I'm never going to watch the cartoons. But like, oh boy, if you want to know Bo-Katan, mm-hmm. There's just apparently reams of information about it and her royal family and the purge of Mandalore and all that stuff.
Yeah. And we're getting enough here for me to follow it. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I've never been scratched my head and be like, huh, I wonder what they're, except for the fucking space whales. I've never scratched my head and be like, huh, I wonder what they're getting at with this.
Mm-hmm. All right, the alien robot begins milking Mando, but Bo-Katan shows up and defeats the alien robot. Its head skitters away and inhabits the larger robot again and attacks her, and she manages to kill it. Boy, she's whipping ass with this darksaber just immediately. It shows like... I don't know if it's where it belongs in her hands, but it definitely, she's more comfortable with it than Mando is.
Now, does this count as her winning it in the combat? Because Mando lost it in combat. She beat the man. Did she beat the thing that beat Mando? So, like, is the Darksaber hers now?
I don't know, because she definitely didn't beat him in combat, but it was taken from him by force. Yeah.
Like, does it go like by complex Harry Potter wand rules where, like, if you beat the guy who beat the guy, then the wand secretly transfers its allegiance to you? Or is it like you have to actually beat the Mando in an actual life or death duel?
It feels a little cheap if this is the loophole that they get through to give her back the Darksaber. Yeah, I wanted to see them deal with that conflict a little bit more, not just have it dissipate because Mando got beat by somebody else.
Because I'm thinking, like, if it does, like, if it doesn't transfer position the power to her, then her discovering the Mythosaur gives her another avenue towards being supreme Mandalorian leadership. Because it seems like, just from what I know from this episode, that if you can tame a Mandalore, you essentially every Mandalore would acknowledge you as their leader.
If you come into town riding a Mythosaur, yeah.
Yeah. Which, you know, there again, you know, Mando keeps the Darksaber as her prince consort. She rules as the Mythosaur riding queen and everything. You know, we get the two tokens of Mandalorian power in the right hands. I was thinking, like, if she also got the Darksaber, can you imagine someone riding a Mythosaur in a battle with the Darksaber? Like, every fucking Mandalore, dead Mandalores would spontaneously resurrect to follow this woman.
Yeah.
Right.
What do you think the capabilities of the Mythosaur are? I actually didn't do any reading on the Mythosaur, so I don't know. Can it leave the waters? Can it run around on land?
I think
Does it have legs?
Since they said that the, like, Mandalore himself apparently tamed one of these beasts and used it as a steed, so it implies that they can get out of the water. But there's not a ton of information. Actually, that's why I said, like, half of the Mythosaur article is text verbatim shit that the Bo-Katan said. What the plaque said and all this
in
other
this episode,
stuff.
Yeah.
So I think they're doing a little bit of myth building themselves. It's just funny this thing's called a Mythosaur. Like, it's almost like, you know, cryptoid or something. Like, it's a fictional beast, but it's really real. I like the detail that because I've always wondered, like, why is the symbol of the Mandalorians this weird goat skull looking thing?
Mm-hmm.
And apparently it's the skull of this this Mythosaur.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. I liked it. Do not remove your helmet. We'll be right back.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of King's Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Hear the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. The first two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV+, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
This is the way. Back to the podcast. Here's more Tribe of Two. All right, Mando wakes up because he's been passed out after being milked and tells Bo that she was right. Mandalore isn't cursed. But she doesn't see it that way since it's completely destroyed, I guess. She tells Mando to rest, but he's determined to continue on his redemption arc, and she decides to go with him.
I thought she says she's not so sure that it isn't cursed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I mean.
Right. So I think she's like, the real curse of Mandalore is what it's is what this conflict has done to our people, turning us against ourselves, our natural strength against. I think that's what she was getting at there.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, apparently she's making a pog soup. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I think that's also this interesting kind of cultural thing. It's like, you know, Mando has these very strong ideas of what makes a Mandalore. And she's like, how in the world can you call yourself a Mandalorian if you never had pog soup, you know?
Look, I just don't like the flavor of cardboard. Come on.
We didn't talk about this, but I didn't know if they had this last season, but I really like Bo-Katan's little force or the little electrical shield she's got. I think that's such cool, like this little shield buckler she can call into action anytime she wants. It's so fucking cool.
And it looks extra awesome in the darkened mines too.
It does. Yeah, it does. It's got that little lightsaber neon kind of, really sets off everything. The light, mm-hmm. There's a lot for the lighting.
Definitely.
It's a
weird thing to ask when you wake up after being saved. I guess he's out of it. He's really out of it. I'll give him this. But he asks, like, how did you find me? Dude, you're the guy who told Grogu to go find her. Presumably to bring her back. You know how he found you, or how she found you.
Yeah. Yeah. But did he like black? Like, is it just like one of those things where like you get a little bit of amnesia because you got a blow in the head and he's disoriented and he just got milked? So.
Yeah. Yeah, that scene, I didn't like that, man. I did not like whatever juices. What are the juices coming out of him?
It's the Mando juice. I don't know what you want from me, man. I thought it looked like blood. I don't know where you're getting this.
Is it because the hose is colored?
I'm trying to yes Andy as much as possible, but I just thought he was just sucking the blood out of him. And he needs it for his biological parts.
I thought it was like an amberish looking fluid.
What
and I'm
would
like,
he
I can
be
only
pull,
think of
what
one
would he be sucking
amber
out of
fluid.
Mando? Right, yeah. You're obsessed with urine and feces today, Jim.
Sorry. You
my God.
The sewers, I can't help it. I'm like a mythosaur that way. Yeah, let's keep moving, I guess.
So why does she offer to escort him to the living water? Does she take pity on him? Is she hoping that, like, if she shows him that this is, like, not a big deal and it's not magic at all, that he will eventually stop being so fucking awkward? What is that? So that's your take on it?
Yeah, her thing about don't thank me until you see him. She's expecting him to get there and be extremely disappointed in what he finds.
She's going to be extremely disappointed because he clearly is having a religious experience when they get there.
But
I guess we'll get there first.
Let's do it. They walk and talk about the destruction of Mandalore and their people. Eventually, they reach the mines. Bo reveals that she's been to the waters in her family's ruling past. I don't know how far you want to go, because this is like the end of the episode here, right?
Okay, let's stop, because I did think it was interesting. Like, if I asked you when you thought the Purge of Mandalore happened, what would you have said before this episode?
Hundreds of years ago.
I thought it was like in uh-huh. antiquities, right? But like, right. Bo's framing it as like she was a little girl.
It happened maybe in her lifetime.
It definitely happened in her lifetime. That not that like Mandalore's any kind of decline. It was like a vibrant place with a ruler and complex culture and all the stuff. And then it was. I looked up on Wikipedia. Apparently, this happened a year or two before the Battle of Yavin.
I was going to say I should have put this together, given that it was the Empire that did the real destruction. But like, I just, my brain wasn't making that connection.
It had to be an Imperial thing.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think the Empire has been around all that long.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, not it's in its current form.
And then this the other thing is like, it seems like the Empire was just really good at destroying something so well that something was a myth. Like 20 years on, like that's always something like Han Solo was talking about ancient weapon, ancient religions and hokey religions and ancient weapons. 20 years after the Jedi were the police.
Yeah. In Anakin's lifetime. Right.
Great Republic. Yeah. Like what the fuck? How did they do this so thoroughly? But apparently they just can. And we see a little bit in the Andors, like, that they have this like Eastern Bloc, East Germany police state where they can just completely manipulate the information and rewrite news feeds and do all this kind of stuff. So like maybe they do have that kind of power.
Yeah, seems like it. I mean, like, it's like if you have the power to destroy worlds,
yeah,
you can destroy a lot of the information about that world too, right? Just by the sheer scale of the destruction.
Yeah. And but that's that they can destroy the Mandalorian culture so thoroughly that Mandalores that should have been there when it's a lot or like have been divided and scattered and have all these legends about their own homeworld. It's amazing how thorough they are.
Yeah, I mean that's why it's an obvious parallel to the Nazis, right? Wanting to wipe out not just the people, but the idea that that the people, the ideas of those people.
Yeah.
So we reach the living waters. Mando strips off his jetpack and his weapons and wades into the waters, reciting the Mandalorian oath. He suddenly plunges deep into the waters, and Bo dives in after him. She finds him, pulls him up to the surface, coming face to face with the Mythosaur in the process. The big thing I took away from this scene is Bo's changing disposition on Mando's faith.
That's yeah. Big thing.
You see when he's walking into the waters reciting this oath, there's something on her face that says, this man believes deeply in this thing. Maybe I'm wrong about it.
I don't know if it's that. It's more of like,
it's not that
like
profound, you're saying that, but it's like a curiosity about it, certainly.
I think what she's realizing is that this, even though this is silly and childlike, this has immense power. Like you see, I thought as the earlier scene where she's talking about her father and he's like, oh, he's an interesting man. I wish I knew him. And she goes, he was a great man. He died defending Mandalore. And when he looked at her and just said, this is the way, but he said it with like reverence, like you can tell that this is like, Mandos have a lot of ideas. Mandalorians have a lot of ideas about how they should die, how they should live. But like, I'm sure at the bedrock, like what they all secretly hope for, if they die as a warrior, is like to die to protect Mandalore. Oh my God. That's like the greatest thing you could ever do or be. And like that had, cause she's everything is every very ironic and jaded and sour grapes with her. But like Mando's like childlike appreciation and faith of the culture is kind of like seeing her like, I don't maybe believe this myself, but look at the power it has. Look at what it compels, like these stupid beliefs. Look at how they compel and inspire him. And maybe I don't know whether she's going to be a little bit more reverent towards her own culture, maybe not to the extent that she wears a mask all the time, or if she's like thinking, I can use this.
Oh,
like these symbols and things that I've scorned, maybe I should lean even more into. And then seeing this mythosaur, this like nearly mythical beast, like now it's like she's putting it all together. But that's a little bit more cynical. Maybe she is. Yeah. Like maybe the mythosaur, maybe this like seeing, you know, like having Jesus meet you on the road to Damascus. Like it's a conversion moment for her.
It's possible. And with as fast as it moved to get us to the minds of Mandalore here, it might move quick in that conversion as well. It's interesting too to think about the last time she saw one of these ceremonies. She was a child, right? It didn't mean the same thing to her as it might mean to someone who has spent the last 20, 30 years thinking about these things and the legacy of Mandalore. She probably has a very different view seeing this go down as an adult than she does as a child. As a child, it was just a curiosity, maybe, you know, a thing that like, oh, I've been told this is why we do this thing. But now seeing someone still doing this, still practicing this in the face of everything Mandalore has been through, it's probably different.
Yeah. And it's like, it's also a contrast, like, you know, her experience at these waters taking her creed, there was like a huge crowd there and she was lavished with gifts. Like it's this big bat mitzvah thing that, you know, it's like, oh, I got an iPad and I got... You know,
it's
Mando,
more about ceremony and just tradition, right? Like this, we do this because we do this.
And we see while the Children of the Watch, how they do their little ceremony and how it's like there was no, it was a very solemn thing. There wasn't cheering. There wasn't gifts. This was just like, this is a responsibility and obligation and duty that you're taking on. And it's just the contrast between his experience of this Mandalorian culture and her own like privileged, a little bit more worldly take on it, I think is really interesting.
Yeah, I think of like maybe a family sitting down to supper together, right? And the way the kids view that as sort of like a burden and just this annoyance, like, oh, do we really have to sit here and talk about our days? And the way the parents view it, right? It's so much more meaningful for them.
Sure.
Yeah, it's the kind of dichotomy I'm seeing her feel in this moment. I think it's really good. Really well done. But that's the end of the episode, man. It's, you know, these are half hour affairs. They're fun. They're light.
Goes down easy.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get the feedback, shall we?
We got a
smattering. We actually got a fair amount of feedback, but I'm gonna say this. So first of all, mando@baldmove.com is how you send us feedback. I don't know how much that I want to get into the deep lore. Like, I don't know that I want people to tell me that, you know, Bo-Katan has a sister, Betty, and she turned evil and she did like the Children of the Watch are an offshoot of the watch that she set up that was actually a Timex watch. But then she had an expedition and her sister had a weekender and they fought over who got the watch. And I don't want to offend anybody that is really steeped in this lore, but I truly don't care. And I suspect a lot of people watching this show don't care. And I feel like if this show wants me to care about it, I'm going to put the burden of them enlightening me about what these connections are. And they like they need to bring the sister. I need to see the damn watch. I need to see them wind it. I need to hit him, see the Indiglo setting. I need that. I can't be pushed to, like I said, I read a Wikipedia article if something's interesting to me, but like I started reading in some of this stuff about the expanded Mando lore and the Purge and all that stuff. And like my eyes crossed because he's getting to just a pile of wheelbarrows.
It doesn't mean anything to you because you haven't experienced it with these characters.
Rin Sabine once took the Darksaber and she twirled it into, and I'm like, I don't know who said, I don't even know how to pronounce this person's
name. Same
with
Ahsoka, right. Yeah, all that stuff. I can't bring it up.
I had no idea who the fuck Ahsoka was until season two of The Mandalorian, and I liked her all the same. So, like, I'm not saying not to keep sending that, because that might be a very unpopular opinion. I might get a lot of feedback saying, no, I need that, then maybe I'll read this. But, like, I honestly don't get a lot out of it. So, having said that, The feedback that I thought was interesting, Tamara said, they're Purgil dudes. You probably received 100 emails from Star Wars completists, but tell Jim they will show up again. They're kind of important. These are the space whales. Apparently, there is a species of space whales called the Purgil or Purgil, and they can natively navigate hyperspace.
Nice.
And there's some connection. The reason that people are super excited is there's some way in the lore connected to Grand Admiral Thrawn. And anyone who was a Star Wars fan for 30 plus years probably has some excitement about hearing the name Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Sure.
I certainly do. But we'll see. I thought Moff Gideon was going to be essentially the wink, wink. This is Admiral Thrawn. But we're not going to do Admiral Thrawn because we legend him out. But apparently not. Rui says, there's something about the last episode of The Mandalorian that got me confused, and since you didn't touch upon it in the podcast, here it goes. At Navarro, Din Djarin seems determined to recruit IG-11 to help him explore the planet Mandalore. Since a droid needs some rare component, we assume Din's next stop would be to find it. But instead, he goes directed to the Mandalore system and expresses his intention to reclaim Mandalore with Bo-Katan. What confuses me is that it seems like we are skipping a step here. Shouldn't he go after the memory drive first?
They
don't explain this, and I didn't even take it as a like I didn't even pick up on it as a weird misstep, but I thought it's like, well, I really want IG-11 to, I trust him to go down there and do a thorough job of checking the atmosphere and to be tough enough to meet any threat that he sees. But you know what's better than IG-11? Bo-Katan. She wanted to reclaim Mandalore. Maybe I can, like, it's like one of those things where it's like, well, it's on the way to Tatooine anyway. So I might as well stop by and just see. Because if she's got a whole Mandalorian battle squad that's ready to escort me back and you know, they think a lot of my fighting ability, maybe that's a boon for them too.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that's what I thought anyway. Danny says, you'd think that Mando would just whip that. He's talking about the Darksaber. Says, you'd think that Mando would just whip the Darksaber out like a boss and say, listen here, and assume the authority of the armorer would go out the window and he would have the entire group following him on whatever side quest he finds himself in. Being that all the expansion of Mandalorian culture and stuff came from the animated series that were ran by the Double Fs, that's Filoni and Favre. They have a handle on it more than anyone else. I feel like it might be an unforced error. Even if I don't like it, the mouse knows they have us by the balls and we will watch, bitch, and then watch again until the end of time, because most of us just have Star Wars in our DNA now, and we just want to go to that galaxy far, far away and get away from whatever else is going on for apparently something like 37 minutes at a time. See, that's where they got you, my friend. You need to sever your own balls to get away from the mouse. If it's a good feel, like we broke free, only came back into the fold when they gave us some good fucking Star Wars in the form of Andor. I didn't see the Obi-Wan series that I hear sucks, except for like 5 minutes of lightsaber combat. I'm not going to see the Ahsoka series unless people it gets 99% on IMDb and everyone says it's amazing.
I'm definitely not going back to Book of Boba Fett.
Definitely not going back to the Book of Boba Fett. Just like, you know, when they serve up something, some proper fucking Star Wars, consume it, otherwise reject it. It's the only way we can make the mouse listen to reason.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I wonder that myself. Like when the armor is like, oh, you're not a Mandalore anymore. Just look at this Darksaber that everyone's already told me means I lead Mandalore in. I am Mandalore. What I say go. I'm the only one. In fact, I'm the only one that can wear a helmet. You all have to wear your helmets backwards now. He has so much reverence for it and he knows that he's not worthy. So he doesn't take it upon himself to do that.
Yeah. That feels right.
Yeah. I wonder how well they would stick to that too. Like if
but if you had like that much reverence, like he would have taken the helmet off in the first place, right? Like he wasn't forced to take his helmet off in at least one of the times he took his helmet off.
But the one I think that's counting against him, he took it off voluntarily to save Grogu. So he loves Grogu more than the code.
Right. So he's not that devoted. a true devotee of the Mandalore way would have let Grogu suffer whatever fate was coming.
Die.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. The other thing is, like, how committed to this Darksaber are they? Like, if C-3PO finds a Darksaber on an abandoned planet, picks it up, do they all worship him like Ewoks?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, no, I guess what they would do is the Mandalore would just challenge him to combat and kill him and take it.
Yeah, cut
like almost
off,
happened
man.
To the man to a Jin last season. Maybe mm-hmm. that's the other reason why Jin is shy, because he thinks, like, was he want to just fend off an endless line of people that want to take the Darksaber from him?
Yeah, if those people exist, I don't know.
Double T's, our final email, says, hey guys, if episode 2 was far better, more eventful and exciting episode, as the word on the street predicts, this was sent just hours before the new episode dropped. Would they've been better to release both of the first two together? They did that with Andor and releasing the first three, and that worked out very well. Maybe since Mando is such a hit show already, they don't need to bother with such things, but the first episode was a bit underwhelming. I don't know that I agree that it was underwhelming, but this has definitely got a bigger hammer to drop at the end.
Yeah, for sure. You're right. They don't need to entice people to watch Mando. People are watching Mando regardless. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess I like don't necessarily agree. I wasn't underwhelmed by the first episode, let's say.
I think that's a thing. It's like, it seems like they they do that for shows that they think are maybe unproven. And also, like, I think as much as I like Andor, I think the first three episodes, with the exception of the end of the third episode, is particularly weak. Like, it's not representative of the season as a whole. So, like, that made a lot of sense. But like you said, this is the third season of Mando. You're going to either watch Mandalorian or not.
Yeah,
and
totally.
I feel like they probably made the right decision to do those weekly. And it's just a different thing. Like, they're these 30-minute episodes. They're just, like, it's a Saturday. True. It's a live-action Saturday morning cartoon. I think it's a good one. It's like Disney's Gargoyles. That was a fucking awesome cartoon. I love that shit. That shit was cool. It was Shakespeare. I was 12 years old. I mean, what do you want to do? But, like, it's still a car. You know, it's not The Wire. It's not Dune. It's not, you know, The Godfather, mm-hmm. The Mandalorian. That's going to do it for us. Mando@baldmove.com. Unless you have something else, Jim?
Nope.
Twitter.com/baldmove. If you want to keep up with all of our latest releases, we're wrapping up The Last of Us this week. We are also in the middle of the throes of a Picard, Star Trek Picard watch. If you want to see a show that we really like to rip on, Yellow Jackets. A really great show on Showtime is returning next week. We're going to be covering that. I'm always mm-hmm. leaving something out. Did I get everything? I think so. And John Wick will be out in a couple of weeks. We do first run movies too. So if you want to follow along with everything we do, check out twitter.com/baldmove. That'll do it for this week's Mando. Until next week, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.